Farewell to Nikola by Guy Boothby. Chapter 1. We were in Venice. Venice, the silent and mysterious, the one European city of which I never tire. My wife had not enjoyed good health for some months past, and for this reason we had been wintering in southern Italy. After that we had come slowly north, spending a month in Florence, a fortnight in Rome, en route, until we found ourselves in Venice, occupying a suite of apartments at Galaghetti's famous hotel overlooking the Grand Canal. Our party was a small one. It consisted of my wife, her friend Gertrude Trevor, and myself, Richard Hatteras, once of the South Sea Islands, but now of the New Forest, Hampshire, England. It may account for our fondness of Venice when I say that 4 years previous we had spent the greater part of our honeymoon there. Whatever the cause may have been, however, there could be no sort of doubt that the grand old city, with its palaces and churches, its associations stretching back to long-forgotten centuries, and its silent waterways, possessed a great fascination for us. We were never tired of exploring it, finding something to interest us, even in the most out-of-the-way corners. In Miss Trevor we possessed a charming companion, a vital necessity, as you will admit, when people travel together. She was an uncommon girl in more ways than one. A girl, so it seems to me, England alone is able to produce. She could not be described as a pretty girl, but then the word pretty is one that sometimes comes perilously near carrying contempt with it. One does not speak of Venus de Medici as pretty, nor would one describe the Apollo Belvedere as very nice looking. That Miss Trevor was exceedingly handsome would, I fancy, be generally admitted. At any rate, she would command attention wherever she might go, and that is an advantage which few of us possess. Should a more detailed description of her be necessary, I might add that she was tall and dark, with black hair and large luminous eyes that haunted one, and were suggestive of a southern ancestor. She was the daughter, and indeed the only child, of the well-known Dean of Bedminster, and this was the first time she had visited Italy, or that she had been abroad. The wonders of the art country were all new to her, and in consequence our wanderings were one long succession of delight. Every day added some new pleasure to her experiences, while each night saw a life desire gratified. In my humble opinion, to understand Italy properly, one should not presume to visit her until after the first blush of youth has departed, and then only when one has prepared oneself to properly appreciate her many beauties. Venice, above all others, is a city that must be taken seriously. To come at a proper spirit of the place, one must be in a reverent mood. Cheap jokes and cockney laughter, as unsuited to the place, where Falieri yielded his life, as a downcast face would be in Nice at carnival time. On the afternoon of the particular day from which I date my story, we had been to the island of Murano to pay a visit to the famous glass factory, of which it is the home. By the time we reached Venice once more, it was nearly sunset. Having something like an hour to spare, we made our way, at my wife's suggestion, to the Florian Cafe on the Piazza St. Mark, in order to watch the people. As usual, the place was crowded, and at first glance it looked as if we would be unable to find sufficient vacant chairs. Fortune favoured us, however, and when we had seated ourselves, and I had ordered coffee, we gave ourselves up to the enjoyment of what is perhaps one of the most amusing scenes in Venice. To a thoughtful mind, the great square must at all times be an object of absorbing interest. I have seen it at every hour and at almost every aspect. At a break of day, which one has to oneself and is able to enjoy its beauty undisturbed, at midday when the importunate shopkeepers endeavour to seduce one into entering their doors by tales of the marvels therein, at sunset when the cafes are crowded, the band plays, and all is merriment, and last but not least, at midnight, when the moon is sailing above St. Mark's, the square is full of strange shadows, and the only sound to be heard is the cry of a gull on the lagoon, or the sapremi of some belated gondolier. "This is the moment to which I have looked forward all my life," said Miss Trevor as she sat back.